protest, I assume, so it,
yeah.
it didn't pose any threat
no.
to the city, which I suppose they thought they could wait you out, right?
Right, and no impending sleeping doom.
Right, they don't want, you know, the menace of sleeping was only a one-night thing, rather than
right.
To know that you are actually lodged in an abandoned building night after night is something more in the Santa Monica City Council than the police department could bear, I think.
Well, one of the people at our protest actually put up a tent, and, you know, someone came quickly to tell us that, no, in fact, a tent is not allowed. So as soon as you try to be a little too organized or you try to do something to make yourself a little more comfortable than what you are, then as a homeless person, then that's not appropriate.
Did you did the person strike her tent, or did she continue to keep it up?
She actually took her tent down.
Oh, boy. Well, you don't want to offend those authorities now, do you?
Yes, exactly. So, without tent, we braved the night, and...
one night was enough, I imagine.
Exactly. And then we marched from Palisades Park all the way to Santa Monica City Courthouse, where O.J. Simpson had his trial, and found out what court I was in. It turned out that we were at the bottom of the list of people to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so then...
This is, of course, for the. This was for your action in the Flamenco Motel takeover, along with two other activists, right?
Absolutely. And so our attorneys came, and we found out that the charges had not even been filed against Michael Rainsborough, who was the legal observer who, at the time of the 5 a.m. raid at the Flamenco, where 40 officers were assigned to do a morning raid. They came in, and Michael was videotaping them coming in and, you know, arresting us. But they were. They had to cut us out at the bear claw devices that we had chained ourselves.
I remember.
Coping with.
That.
Yeah, so...
Now, at the court, did you...
That. And they arrested him. They told him to leave the property and, you know, shuffled him down the street, and he came...
Similar to what they did with the media in Golden Gate Park. They actually began to arrest... they arrested all the alternative media. They ran around ticketing us for observing the police ticketing people in Golden Gate Park in the latest whitewash Willie Brown police sweeps, which you may have been reading about in the papers.
Well, the interesting thing that I read about this that particular Golden Gate Park clean out is I think the LA Times did a piece where they actually mentioned that somebody was roasting a raccoon out there. Did you hear about that?
I heard the story, but I don't, I mean, to me it's apocryphal until we get specifics, because so much of it is based upon this sensational distortions by a man named Ken Garcia from the San Francisco Chronicle.
Well, I mean, here they are talking about, you know, a person roasting a raccoon, and nobody's making the correlation that, you know, during the Depression era, that's exactly what people were doing. They were roasting raccoons and horses and anything they could get a hold of because they didn't have access to food. And, you know, I was just really shocked that, you know, no one
picked up on that one.
That they even talk about perspectives. Like, from one perspective, you know, here's the shock of somebody having to eat a raccoon, or, you know, wanting to eat a raccoon, hosting it, Colvin Gay Park.
So, did the media cover your trial much? Did you say you mentioned those three papers, or those three news outlets. Did you get much favorable coverage? Did people know about why you're doing what you're doing?
I don't think people know why. I think they know that we did what we did. I mean, basically, we had a few articles in some of the papers that mentioned us, and then we had a couple of commentaries from different, commentators who talk about, well, you know, the homeless, something needs to be done about it, but by far, you know, the homeless people, they don't need to be attacking the city.
Yeah, why don't they move to Culver City?
Right, exactly. Go to Culver City and talk to them, or go to Beverly Hills.
Right.
And tell them that they aren't doing enough. You know, why are you talking to us? We do enough as it is. $2 million on homelessness, and guys.
So, but the last time you had such a protest, I mentioned that back in '92, '93 when I came down with you. We were there for a little while, sleeping out at City Hall, trying to get the parks open for the end of harassment in the park. This was before you actually had a law 2 years later that made it illegal to sleep citywide. But you actually tried a protest this summer, a shower stall. How did the protest at the nativity scene compare to your shower stall protest?
Well, no pictures were involved in the press articles. The one
the most recent
shower stall protest, I had these huge pictures of, you know, me washing my hair out of a sink, and I think that is a breathtaking image for
most people. That was a protest focusing on the fact that the homeless were not being allowed showers because of just naked bigotry by city authorities, right?
And the fact that homeless people have no shower options and have to, you know, take their showers out of sinks in public places. And trying to dramatize the more human aspect of that, you know, event.
No pictures this time, though.
But no pictures this time.
No pictures of you.
Here we are.
With your heads next to the baby.
Well, with candles in our hands, and they're saying that no homeless people ever show up for these protests. And we finally have a protest where homeless people are there and totally dedicated. And, you know, they come and they take a couple of comments and then they leave. And so, I mean, and if it wasn't for our a couple of friends of ours who have been dedicated to coming out and filming every one of our actions, we certainly wouldn't have a lot of the documentation.
We found in Santa Cruz,
a lot of this has happened.
We found in Santa Cruz that a lot of the best way to do this is to make yourselves visible at events where there's some official hoozy doozy going on, and the media are there anyway. So if you can find some Christmas type event that's happening the next few days and latch onto it, then, you know, they will call you disruptive, they will call you mean and nasty, they will call you counterproductive, but they will report what's going on because, you know, you're there in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the trouble with planning your own event is nobody comes.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, only the very devoted come. But if you're in the middle of the situation that's already there, they can't help but report you. Just a tip from a sometime activist up here in Santa Cruz.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Anything you want to add about this, Jennifer, and how can people support this? Have any social service agencies or churches supported your protest?
A couple have silently supported us. A couple of the social service agencies, everybody's concerned about their funding, and they don't want to seem as if they're siding with the homeless, which is really bizarre. I mean, if there's one thing that I'd like to say is that there's no sides to this issue, and the fact that the government, our government, refuses to sit down at a table with us, that social service agencies who claim to know what's best for us refuse to sit down at a table and talk about issues that we have with them, that is what chooses sides.
You have attempted to negotiate with agencies in order to get them to open up the shelters, declare a state of emergency, allow the flamenco to continue to be used.
Well, they have no power in the Flamingo. McGuire Thomas Partners has that power.
But the city could presently put pressure on them to allow it to be used.
And certainly, especially since it's all part of the Civic Center development plan. But I think agencies, at this point, they need funding before they'll commit to anything. What we'd like to do is to be able to petition all of the churches and ask them to open up their prayer areas for people to get out of the cold and the rain on an overnight basis. And so far we haven't heard back from any of them.
Why don't you just do a little march down to the biggest church in town and just hang out there all night when it's raining?
Right, and just keep knocking on their doors. And
just go inside and lie down. And then if they want to arrest you in the church, I guess they can.
Mm-hmm.
Another anarchist statement from your own Uncle Robert up here up to the north. So how can folks support you before we move on this topic?
They can support us either through the Flamingo Defense Fund, which we're going to be charged with about $1,000 in fines and penalties each. And that's for myself and David Bush, who is another homeless protester. And people can do that or even call us for information about what's going on and pass that information out to others, publish it in other city newspapers, and just get the talk up in all cities in California. Do that by calling...
Address or phone number?
Yeah, 310-289-7446.
7446.
Yeah, and give me your address, and I can send you information about what's going on at the Flamingo.
Excellent. So you can also write to you at what address?
P.O. Box 3622 Santa Monica.
P.O. Box 3622 Santa Monica.
90408.
Care of Jennifer Wagoner or the Flamingo Defense Fund?
The Flamingo Defense Fund.
Flamingo Defense Fund. Well, thank you, Jennifer Wagoner. Good luck down there. I don't know what to tell you, except it sounds like this, at least this season, you've got people interested in asserting their own rights, which sometimes can be the most important first step. Which, well, it is the most important first step.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Empowerment of the people. And thank you very much, Robert, for your time.
Yeah. And you're listening to Free Radio, Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That was an interview with Santa Monica homeless activist Jennifer Wagoner, who faces trespass charges for her part in opening up and standing firm with over 100 homeless people who took over the motel down there, the abandoned motel, used it for shelter for a week, and then were dispersed into the rain by the kindly Santa Monica authorities. If you want to get in touch with her and you missed some of those numbers and addresses, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, anytime during the week. That's my phone number, and the phone number of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF. Our studio line, however, is now open, 423-5361, here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. If you want to call in at 423-5361, please do. And I also want to remind you that a discussion of the Happy John Dine killing is happening on mainstream AM radio even as we speak. At least it was a few moments ago, I'm told, at 1080 KSCO, or KKKSCO, as some call it. You can give a call in there if you want to join that discussion, if you find it interesting, at 479-1080, 479-1080 for the KSCO call-in number. They need some truth there, and I hope that those who have been following the case, perhaps read the DA's investigation, looked over some of the relevant facts, or just have concerns to raise, call KSCO at 479-1080. It's a show that should go on until 2 o'clock, I believe. A lot of lying, a lot of abuse going on that show, so get ready for anything. Our number, on the other hand, where you'll get only the most courteous treatment, is 423-5361, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Now, talking about the John Dine case, I wrote a letter to the Metro Santa Cruz, which they agreed to print, but then cut it down by half. Now, it was a rather long letter, I've got to admit, about 1,150 words, and they're going to print 600 of it, which I suppose I should be grateful for. But for all of you hardcore fans out there of mine, or just people interested in my perspective on the John Dine case, much of which you've probably heard before, I'm going to read you this letter now, and you'll have the option to read it yourself. It'll be out as a flyer, hopefully being distributed around the city by gnomes and homeless folks and bearded activists on a corner near you. The flyer is headed Metro and Sentinel Front for Cops in Happy John Killing Cover-Up, and the letter reads like this. Metro Santa Cruz, Dear Editor, good for Celia Scott for making public and putting in the main library documents that were part of the DA's investigation into the John Dine killing. Now we need a truly independent tribunal to hold full public hearings and disclosure of all documents in the case. Santa Cruzans for Full Disclosure formed shortly after the retarded but innocuous Happy John Dine was killed on November 12th. We called for public hearings and an independent review when it seemed likely that a cover-up was in progress. This conclusion seemed hard to avoid since virtually every witness not associated with the police contradicted the official story from the SCPD and the district attorney's office issued just 16 hours after Dine lay dying on the sidewalk. The SCPD itself rushed forward with an early Dine's toy gun made me do it exoneration just 3 hours after the shooting. A day after Officer Carey killed John Dine, Police Chief Steve Belcher and District Attorney Art Danner held a press conference restricted to invited media that fleshed out the justifiable homicide conclusion.
The two announced that Dine had a weapon in his hand, a weapon pointed, a combat stance, and a threatening demeanor, and that all witness testimony was consistent with these conclusions. This story is based on the two witnesses whose accounts most exonerated Officer Carey, the Catalyst bouncer, Ben Newman, and Carey's partner, Martin Over. Newman, in the back of the police car, made the complaint that initiated the fatal sequence of events leading to Dine's killing. Within days after the killing, eyewitnesses Alani Ballowager, Stacy Buckaloo, Mike Schultz, Tom Murphy, Larry Reddick, and eight others agreed that they saw nothing in Dine's hand, no threatening behavior, nothing pointed at the police, and no combat stance. The five named witnesses went public with their accounts. Schultz, Buckaloo, and Murphy publicly used the word murder to describe Carey's actions. Released to the public on December 10th at Mayor Scott's order, the DA's report gives even more cause for concern. According to that report, four additional witnesses, Liana Forrest, Leslie Plumley, Shannon Gannon, and Margaret Bonacker, watched the shooting and saw no weapon in Dine's hand, much less a weapon pointed at the police. In addition, seven others, reluctant to come forward publicly, have told Santa Cruzans for full disclosure that Dine had nothing in his hands and nothing pointed at the police when he was shot down. Are the two involved officers and a witness friendly with the killer and hostile to Dine more credible than the many independent eyewitnesses? Belcher and Danner think so. The case remains closed. Officer Carey is on the beat with a weapon on his belt. Chief Belcher cashes in his monthly paycheck and perhaps a Christmas bonus in spite of what is the clearest case of gross incompetence or outright misconduct in the SCPD in a decade. Even the public copy of the DA's investigation is incomplete, lacking Officer Carey's police report, a transcript of the police radio transmissions, and Happy John's rap sheet, to name only three crucial documents. John Dine's ashes are all that is left of a street person who reported frequent harassment by the police downtown. The Santa Cruz County Sentinel, meanwhile, has wallowed in police apologetics. Its sudden editorial call for an independent investigation on December 11th, welcome as it was obviously forced on them by the public disclosure of the police reports and witness testimony to the DA. Its news stories were police DA PAP and PR handouts. Within 4 days of the shooting, it praised the police in two editorials, lauding the police, and closed the case. The Sentinel delayed or buried critical letters on the shooting, sidelined or deleted any mention of the massive swell of protest around this case, and assigned a reporter, Karen Clark, so prejudiced against street people like Happy John and activists in Santa Cruzans for full disclosure that she can't bring herself to interview them. Neither Clark nor Bob Gammon, the previous Sentinel reporter on the case, had any interest in reviewing the videoed statements of the eyewitness accounts of Buckaloo, Schultz, and others who were shocked and outraged at the media police cover-up. The Citizens Police Review Board showed similar timidity and disinterest in the death of a street person. The CPRB, Citizens Police Review Board, held no emergency meeting in the weeks that followed the slaying. No early or independent investigation, and in spite of a room full of people, it declined to go on record and vote on the matter. Instead, it held a brief discussion on general rules to follow in the case of an independent investigation, yet came up with no specific guidelines. It concluded the meeting by refusing to schedule a special public hearing on the Dine case or even an early, regular meeting. Members of the public who want open public hearings and an independent investigation on the Dine case should attend its December 29th closed hearing and demand it be opened. Uninterested in poor people's rights, the local ACLU has done nothing. It fell to people like Dine to speak up for the homeless. Dine marched in a parade against police brutality and spent many hours supporting homeless rights at the 7.5-month-long City Hall sleepers protest last year. This year, he received his reward. Non-police witnesses testified they heard Carey say, "Don't move," after, not before, the shots. Three claim they saw an officer, probably Over, remove a weapon from Dine's clothing and throw it to the ground where the toy gun was later found. Metro Santa Cruz's contribution to the quest for justice in the Happy John Dine case so far was an early column which sympathetically remembered Dine and suggested, quote, a full but not necessarily independent investigation so that similar tragedies will be avoided. Eric Johnson, who wrote the column, then denounced me as a, quote, self-styled homeless activist trying to churn up fear and anger around this tragedy whose hysterical, paranoid provocations polarize the community and make the process more difficult. His writing may also have led readers to believe that I flooded Metro with emails, faxes, and hostile phone calls, none of which happened. Officer Carey shot an innocent man dead. All of us make mistakes under pressure. Was it justifiable homicide, murder, or something in between? Belcher and Danner had their answer ready early. The rest of us require a more careful examination and weighing of all the testimony. Whatever the outcome of that investigation, whether Carey is exonerated or implicated, repressing and misrepresenting evidence is still a cover-up, behavior we cannot tolerate in police chief or district attorney. Signed, Robert Norse. That's the letter you won't read in the Metro Santa Cruz. You'll read selections from that letter, we hope, in the next Metro. Wow. Well, it's nearing the end of the hour here. I should say the end of the 2.5 hours. I was going to read you a letter I wrote regarding Free Radio Santa Cruz, but I'm afraid I'm about to be ousted from the studio yet again. Every time I sit down here, it seems that some clown comes in and tries to evict me from my seat. I resent this, however.
A warrant for your arrest.
Oh, no. Yes, well, there you are. I want to thank you for hanging with me on Free Radio here, and I hope that you will tune in to the John Dine discussion or trashing of activists, whatever it happens to be, on KSCO that's going on even as I speak. That's 479-1080 is the call, not the call number, but the number to call in, the phone number, 479-1080. And you can do your part in spreading a little truth in a world of falsehood, in this case the mainstream world of radio. I'll be back with you on either I or one of my tapes will be with you on Christmas Day at 6 o'clock. That's next Thursday. In the meantime, I might be live, but in the meantime, we've got a real live one right behind me. It looks like Skidmark Bob is Reckless B. You don't look like Reckless B.
Never seen us at a party together, have you?
No, actually, I haven't. No, that's a good point. And perhaps we'll see about that. Anyway, stay tuned and come on back. Thank you.
Mr. White House, don't send me to the poorhouse. You've taxed my pockets empty and my bills I cannot pay. Please, Mr. White House, I'm living in the doghouse. The bank just came to repossess and took my house away. Please, Mr. White House, don't send me to the jailhouse. I just want to live my life the way it's supposed to be. Please, Mr. White House, my friends are in the big house. I just want to have a home and feed my family. Please, Mr. White House, I can't afford a dollhouse. While you have many colored rooms with closet space to spare. Please, Mr. White House, tell me your house is my house. When I come to Washington, I'll move in with you there. White House, I'm living in the doghouse. The bank just came to repossess and took my house away. Please, Mr. White House, take your programs to the outhouse. Until the truth comes out of you, it's in there you can stay. Until the truth comes out of you, it's in there you can stay.
Thank you, Robert Norse. That was another enthralling episode of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, Homeless Rights, Poor Motherfuckers. Thank you, Robert Norse, the most annoying man in Santa Cruz. Yes, we have our pleasure for him to be here on Free Fucking Radio. This is Reckless. Hi, everybody. How's it going? Got my coffee ready. Good morning. Good afternoon. Fucking it up in a fuck society. Music and issues for brainwashed children. I'm going to go ahead and start the show off with my theme song that Skidmark Bob made. And he didn't make it for me, but I'm really enjoying it, and I enjoy using it. So here we go. Brainwash.
Thank you.